So hi everyone, welcome back to the podcast. So today we're joined by Katrina of Foxmont Capital. So excited to really welcome Katrina of Foxmont Capital to the podcast today. And they have an extensive portfolio and we'll be diving deep into first how she found out about Foxmont, and then we'll be hopefully diving into her typical day as an investment associate. So hi Katrina, could you share a bit about what is Foxmont and how did you exactly end up hearing about Foxmont?
Yeah, thanks Ruby. So Foxmont is quite a young venture capital firm. So it's a independent Philippine focused VC fund, also based in the Philippines. So we were founded in late 2018 by four founding partners, and they were all operators themselves. Two were closely associated with Grab, and then the other two have built a real estate business here in the Philippines that also exited. And during the time, they really identified a funding gap for early stage Filipino businesses, you know, built by Filipino entrepreneurs. And being in the space of, you know, especially with Grab, having the two founding partners having been part also of kind of the Series A due diligence and seeing how the external capital kind of boosted Grab's growth, they wanted to replicate that also for Filipino entrepreneurs. So that's kind of the backstory of how Foxmont was founded. Since then, we've invested in over 36 companies across different sectors. So we have a mix of e-commerce, fintech, F&B, health, and more. And we're really early stage investors. So our comfort zone is seed stage. We sometimes back pre-seed. So even pre-revenue, pre-product, if we really like the sector and if we really believe in the founder. And yeah, we're continuously looking for, you know, more investment opportunities. And then how I got to learn about Foxmont. So it was right at the start of the pandemic when I heard about it. So actually, before hearing about Foxmont, I didn't know that venture capital existed in the Philippines. It's a very nascent industry, for those of you who don't know. There were VC firms that existed prior to pandemic, so around like early 2010s, but they were more CVCs, and the kind of ecosystem was still very young then, not much velocity in deals, and the pandemic was really kind of a catalyst for the growth of the ecosystem and for, you know, entrepreneurs. So it was the pandemic hit, and then my previous boss in my other internship was hired at Foxmont as the first principal, and you know, I wasn't really doing anything in the pandemic, and I was presented with this opportunity. So my previous boss asked if I wanted to join his internship team to kind of do some market research and publish the first Philippine venture capital report, and I think it was a good first step into the VC ecosystem since it was just ramping up. So it was good for me to kind of delve deep into research back then. So I worked with a team of co-interns that was in June 2020, did the first, you know, was part of the editorial team of the first Philippine Venture Capital Report. Did that for 3 months. I was still in school, actually. I was in my last year of university, so I hadn't graduated yet. So after that internship stint, that was June to August of 2020. And then in January of 2021, I was presented with another internship opportunity with Foxmont, which is more investments focused and portfolio and also help with fundraising. So that was where I was exposed to more actual VC functions versus research. And the early 2021 was when everything was ramping up, and it was just perfect timing. And it was just really sparking my interest, and I really enjoyed kind of the nature of the job with early stage investing, and kind of being at the forefront of the industry and being part of the early team members of the, so Foxmont's actually the first independent venture capital fund. So it was kind of a privilege to be part of that team. as well. So that's kind of like my backstory and kind of a background of the fund.
Firstly, that's amazing that, you know, you broke into venture capital straight out of college. And that's quite a feat coming, especially for people who come from backgrounds where they may not have had access to such opportunities, and you had that access. And so how important is having access to opportunities, and how important is that to getting a break into VC? Like, what do you recommend as a first step for someone who wants to get into VC?
Yeah, I think looking at my other colleagues, not just in Foxmont, but also, you know, analysts, associates, and interns of other VC funds, whether local or regional VCs that are hiring their local investment team members, I think the common denominator is they really prioritize networking, and they don't shy away from connecting with people, whether that's online or attending events, people from the space. I think it's important, especially with, you know, the nature of the job, to show initiative. And the reason why I say that is maybe that's more specific to the Philippines, but there's no really precedent to kind of VC now. There were a few, obviously, investment team members and people and fund managers prior to pandemic, but really like kind of the what we're seeing now and the boom in the ecosystem, we didn't have that before. So when, you know, young people who are interested in, you know, joining the industry or joining firms, it's good when they take initiative and, you know, learn from people in the space, whether those are, you know, investors or even founders themselves. I think that's an important step to kind of being connected with the right people in terms of, you know, getting the job.
I think what you mentioned is key there, that networking and access is just so important, especially in VC, which is basically a networking game, to be honest. So my next question to you is kind of on your previous point. You mentioned something on the Philippines Venture Capital Report. So I'm basically very clueless about Philippines. I have no idea about Philippines. So could you just shed some light on like the Philippines Venture Capital Report? Like, what were some of the key takeaways, if you could remember any? And could you just shed some light on the Philippines startup and VC ecosystem, and what are some key things that the audience today should be aware of about the ecosystem?
Yeah, sure. Maybe more on a macro lens first for the Philippines, for those who aren't as familiar with the nation. In the perspective of Southeast Asia, we are the country with the youngest population. Our median age is around 24 to 25. And I think that's important for startups that are building very tech-enabled solutions, because, I mean, this kind of age group are digital natives, right? So it's a very young population, you know, younger than Indonesia, Vietnam, and all the other Southeast Asian countries. We are also the second largest population in Southeast Asia. We're 112 million Filipinos, and we add 1 million each every year. So it's a very large, you know, population base, right? So there is that, it's a sizable addressable market. And we are also very consumer driven. So our economy is very driven by domestic consumption, products and services, which is why, you know, direct-to-consumer investing is very interesting for us now, because we see that, you know, as Filipinos are getting, they're rising to higher middle income and, you know, presented with more, let's say, modern products and services. We see that it's a key catalyst also for consumer businesses. So that's something that we watch out for as investors. And then lastly, we're crazy about social media. We're the nation that spends the most time this is globally, okay? They shouldn't spend the most time on social media. I think we spend north of 10 hours and the average is somewhere around 6. So we're very, we love our Facebook, we love our TikTok. And I think it's, that's also important in terms of, you know, accessing, you know, different tech-enabled products and services. So that's kind of like macro lens. I could go on and on, but I would point your audience and also you, Ruhi, to kind of download the report. It's on our website. We publish one every year. So we just published one a few months ago. It's a 2023 one. So it would be good if you guys could, you know, go through that and learn more about our market. And then what was your second question?
My second question was, could you shed some light on the Philippines VC and startup ecosystem? Like, what are the trends that people should be looking out for?
Yeah, so the startup and VC ecosystem. Maybe starting with the VC ecosystem. It's crazy because aside from local venture capital funds, you know, popping up here in the Philippines, so there's new ones coming out, right? There's very early stage ones aside from the CVCs. So it's good that, you know, there's, I mean, the more funds, the more capital, and it's just better for the ecosystem. So there are more VC fund players coming in, local ones, but also more interestingly, we receive a lot of visits from regional and global GPs or venture funds in our office, and you know, who visit also other local VCs to learn more about the market. You know, it's really becoming a bright spot in Southeast Asia and the wider region. So we receive around like three, like visits from funds weekly. You know, very interested to learn more about Filipino entrepreneurs, Filipino startups, and just the market. So it's robust there. And then more on the startup side, in terms of deal flow, we see around like 10 to 15 new companies that we've never heard of weekly. And it really helps because actually like Filipinos aren't very, like traditionally and culturally, we aren't very entrepreneurial. And I think that's a combination of a lot of things. First, because they're very, they prioritize safety and kind of having a safety net of having, you know, monthly compensation. And I think because back then they didn't really see a lot of external capital, you know, or funding helping entrepreneurs kind of execute their business ideas. But as the ecosystem has grown and they've seen that, oh, Filipino companies are getting funded or getting support from not just local guys, but also regional funds, it kind of sparks that entrepreneurial spirit in them. And it helps that a lot of Filipinos that were educated abroad who are very familiar with VC, and, you know, some have come from Silicon Valley and have come back home to build businesses. A lot of expats from global companies choosing to build startups in the Philippines. I think it's a good trajectory to kind of educate Filipinos and, you know, further spur that entrepreneurial spirit in them. And then in terms of trends, just like with any nascent startup industry or startup market, it's less so about innovation and like out of the world, you know, business ideas, because we're still, I mean, looking at the Philippines now, it's still very traditional, and even it's less more about innovating, but more about solutions. Right. So we're not yet there where we're seeing very revolutionary innovations or businesses. It will come, but it's still quite early now. So right now we're just seeing digital solutions to very traditional markets. Right. Which is a very good fundamental first step for the ecosystem. And then in terms of industry, I think that we're still seeing a lot of interesting startups coming out from e-commerce, fintech. we have the biggest startups in the Philippines are fintechs, fintech companies, but there's still a lot of opportunity to build kind of fintech adjacent startups. And then lastly, like I mentioned it also a while ago, you know, relating to the Philippines being a very consumer-driven economy, Foxmont, we're very bullish on direct-to-consumer companies. So founders that are building the next generation products for the longest time before, before this time, we've been seeing the same products for many, many years from the local guys. And the only new products that we see are ones from the West but that don't really resonate well with, you know, the local taste of Filipinos. So we see a big opportunity where, you know, Filipino entrepreneurs are becoming more kind of creative with the types of products that they want to serve kind of the new generation of Filipinos. So I think those three industries are what Foxmont, what we're looking out for.
I think that was extremely fascinating. As somebody who has no idea about Philippines and no idea about what's going on apart from like my podcast. So that was a really insightful discussion that you shared. And I think my key takeaways are that, you know, you have to visit other local VCs and understand everybody in the market, not just in your market. And yeah, I think I absolutely love everything that Foxmont Capital is doing, and I wish you guys the best of luck with everything that's going on. And so my last question to you, so what makes exceptional founders, and what are some of the types of different founder archetypes that Foxmont Capital backs?
Yeah, so what makes exceptional founders? There's not really like a cookie cutter founder that we look at, or like the perfect criteria that makes a founder exceptional. I think what's common with founders that do really well is founders that have a really deep connection and deep root with the startup that they're building and the industry that their company is in, right? Because at the end of the day, there's many smart individuals, there's many brilliant individuals that, you know, can pull an idea out of the cloud and just say, oh, I want to do this, this will make me a lot of money. Building a VC-backed and external capital-funded company, there's a lot of pressure too. And I think that's something that a lot of people shy away from talking about publicly. It's kind of something that founders experience, right, that are VC-funded. It's hard when there's just this pressure on you to, when you have investors, you know, to do really well. But I think founders are able to navigate that pressure well and kind of have that motivation to keep going. I mean, building businesses isn't hard, right? I mean, isn't easy. So when they have that deep connection to the problem that they're trying to solve, it's really, you know, in them to build their company to serve and to kind of solve the problem the right way. They're, you know, day in and out, they're very motivated to do problem solving, work with their team, work with their investors, and it's, you know, that they're building the company and doing what they're doing for the right reason. I think that's what's important for me when I look at founders, and I think that's what I, you know, as I said, like, it's a common denominator with exceptional founders. It's when they have that deep connection with the solution, with the problem that they're trying to solve. It's also because they understand the problem themselves, so they know if they are the customers themselves, it also really helps because they know the pain points. They know how to navigate the company to, you know, create the right solution. So I think that's what's important. I think I don't really look at, you know, whether they're from sales or tech obviously it's important to have diversity in the founding team, but when they have that shared kind of frustration with a problem that the company is trying to solve, it really stands out. And then in terms of the type of founders Foxmouth likes to back, I don't think it's any different from what I just said. I think the partners are also very aware of kind of the positives that bring when we know collectively that the founder knows a problem in and out. So yeah, I think it's important that when you, you know, do these pitches, you know, for the young people in the investments team or those who want to get into the industry, it's important to see if the founder really knows the problem well. I like to ask questions if they've actually experienced the problem that they're trying to solve, and really looking for that connection.
I think my biggest takeaway was that there's no cookie cutter founder, and you have to have a deep connection to the problem you're trying to solve. And I loved your point on shared frustration. I think that was a really great way to put it. And so my next question and last question to you, so making the jump from intern to investment associate. So I saw that you had started off at Fox One Capital as an intern, and now you are an investment associate. So how did you make that jump, and how did you make that pivot? And what skills do you think are needed to break into VC?
Yeah, I think just generally, and it applies to any fresh out of college individual who is starting their career. So it's not very specific to the industry that I'm in. I think it's important to just embrace tasks and challenges, even if they're not listed on your job description, even if you weren't really hired to do it, even if it's I see a lot of posts by Gen Z saying that it's out of their pay grade to be doing some of the things that they're tasked to do. I think it's good to just embrace these things, because every time you accept a task, every time you say yes to a responsibility, it's putting yourself out there. It's another opportunity for your higher ups, or another opportunity for your higher ups to see you perform. And it's good to see that you have that initiative to take on challenges, and it's okay to make mistakes. Let's say you're underqualified to do that. You live and you learn, right? You can't really learn how to swim without getting wet. Especially for this industry, it's a very steep learning curve. You can't learn it academically. There's no, rule book to how to invest or how to be good at early stage investing. So I think building experiences and embracing challenges is an important thing in terms of just growing in terms of, you know, your career. And yeah, I think there's also, it's important also to prioritize self-development, having that initiative, you know, when you're not at work, you know, learning, I don't know, watching podcasts or reading books or learning more about, you know, the industry that you're in. I think keeping that learning is important even outside of the workspace. And I think it's just important that you're in an industry that you really enjoy, because then it really doesn't feel like work and you're very passionate about it, and you're just very motivated to be good at what you're doing, right? So I think, yeah, just being like not afraid of taking on challenges, that will really catalyze your growth. And that's what I did when I was an intern. I never said no to anything. I don't think I remembered saying no to any of the tasks that were, you know, put on my table. So I think that's important. And that's like, that just puts you above the average, right? If you're always willing to just take on tasks.
I think you summed that up perfectly well at the end, and I absolutely loved our conversation today. So how can the audience reach you, and how can they connect with you? And also, how can, you said that you'd mentioned that, you know, you guys are looking for companies. So how can the audience pitch to Fox One Capital?
Yeah, so how can the audience reach me? I think you can just connect with me through LinkedIn, hit me up, send me a message. I try to, you know, reply to everyone, especially, you know, people who want to learn about the industry. I'm happy to connect with you all. And then in terms of companies that who want to pitch Foxmont, on our website, there's like an entry or like a form where you can, you know, write a short description of your company. You can also attach your pitch deck and submit that. And then that, you know, feeds into our investments email and also to every investments team member. And we filter that religiously, which is, we actually look at it weekly. So yeah, I think that's the best way for you, for companies to be seen by Foxmont.
So if you're listening to this podcast right now, I have an open opportunity to reach this audience. So if you want to reach college students and freshers interested in startups and venture capital, and just in terms of the demographics, the age of 18 to 22 is the highest age demographic, and India and US are the two largest country demographics of listeners for this podcast. Email me at bizpodruhi@gmail.com. So thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode, and hope you've learned something new.